What do you see the 50 metre building restriction area being used for?
The reason that I've recommended that is for consistency with the southern side of the highway, which has a similar setback. And there is existing rules in the ODP and the PDP for land under the rural zoning, 50 metre setback in that location. So it's partly to do with ensuring that the form has an appropriate amenity to that entrance of Queenstown, and that building restriction area doesn't mean that it can't be used for other things that might go alongside with the high density residential zoning. It's obviously just to restrict buildings in that location. And
does it prohibit buildings in that location, or just is that in the city? Does it require consent with design controls, or what?
Well, the building restriction area in the plan currently, and what I was envisaging, what the same would apply here, is that there's a rule that says no buildings should be located within that, and the non-compliant status is non-compliant, so yes, you could seek a consent for things with that.
So now the question I asked, what do you envisage it being used for?
Yep.
A bit more specific than something to do with the high density using it.
Yeah. Well, it could be for reserve space that fronts the built form to provide the connections, pedestrian and cycle, for example, to the highway, wherever they may end up being, to enable the cross connections. I also see that given the importance of that highway, as the significant infrastructure, that it would be inappropriate to allow buildings to go that close to the highway.
One of the things I did ask and hope that you would include on this was contour lines, because at the eastern end, isn't that land some distance above the road?
Yes, it is. At the choir rise.
Yes.
End.
Do you have any idea of what elevation above the road is like then?
I would say somewhere between 6 and 10 metres, at least.
So, would there be anything, is anything served by having a 50 metre setback at the top of a 10 metre rise? Views from the road?
It may be just practical at the end. But it's still the road connections obviously to be designed. If someone wants to develop that, that's so I'm unsure where exactly that would be located. And I guess putting the building restriction area at the moment allows for that to be looked at in detail.
Which they have in the plan. You don't look at the detail, and you have to comply with that one.
And let's just all consent to the restriction.
We go to the other end. We've got the Crenshaw substation. And we've got the OCB, and as notified, we've got medium density residential there, except for the OCB. If we didn't accept your recommendation, what would you see the main zone rural within the OCB could practically be used for?
Well, within the rural framework, one could obviously seek consent for a different type of land use, and there are other land uses that can be undertaken in the area that aren't SM, and one of those proposed here is commercial or industrial. And
but the trafficking ordinance is that there should be no commercial or industrial, both from Ms. Banks and from NZTA.
And the economic evidence also suggests that land shouldn't be used for that purpose. So I guess I'm saying that if that demand was there at some time, and a landowner does still have options to seek other land uses in that area.
Have you, in your career as a planner, heard of the term planning blight?
It's a normal.
Would you like me to explain what planning blight is?
Yeah, yeah. The context, yeah.
Imposing planning rules, which means that land can't realistically be used for anything and they just lay as waste. Is that what we would end up with this land? That consistent with improving the urban entrance into Queenstown, even as it is now?
Yes, but I think that there might be other means that you can make as opposed to enabling the type of built form in that location.
Such as?
Well, I guess I prefer to a recreational purpose. There might also be an airport infrastructure and part of that land. It's not to the seat, but I just think that there are other options for the land. I don't think that it's a waste land necessarily in the surface of the rural zone.
What sort of infrastructure would you contemplate?
Well, when I say that, I suppose I'm referring more to the Hanson Road end, where there are have been proposals to improve that intersection there. So part of that
land. Yeah, so if we take the land from the substation through to Hawthorne Drive, at present time, I think there might be one house there, or two, I'm not sure, surrounded by hedges, and the rest is just open paddocks. But the poles on it for the proposed church and associated buildings. But none of that, but how do you foresee that changing if it's just left rural?
You mean if the church was constructed?
Well, how do you foresee it being used if it remains rural? And it sounds to me like the option is reserved. Is that what you're suggesting?
I'm just suggesting that there doesn't appear to be an appropriate zone within the zones that we're reviewing at the moment. Should apply to that name. And the other aspect perhaps wanted to raise was that the rezoning of land, which Bill has partly touched on, was also can also make it more difficult for landowners to develop that land, so and make it potentially also incentivise land banking as well. So
I'm not sure how leaving that rural land banking rather than what incentivise land banking. We're probably talking on each site.
For example, for a commercial use, and that landowner sold that land, and the next buyer bought that land at a premium because it's been rezoned, the ability for them to develop and make that profit is reduced. And so, partly can lead to that land being more difficult to develop, or people have holding onto that land. So, I'm not sure that.
If we look at it in that sense, I think what we're leading to is the potential for commercial activities to go in. Do you have any idea what the total area of that land between Hawthorne Drive and the substation is that's within the OCD?
Not specifically.
Well, I had a quick look on the GIS, and each of those sites is 40 feet. It would be between 1 and 1.5 hectares per site, just looking at the line. So 4 hectares in the scheme of things is not a huge area. And especially if you take off 30 feet. So you'd be down to 2.5 hectares.
Mm. Yes, that's right. My issue with that zoning this time was to do with the difficulty in fitting with either the local shopping centre or the business use zone purpose, and having to craft that zone in a way that to restrict the asset, and they didn't really fit with the way those zones have been set up, and also obviously the traffic evidence and the economic evidence.
Earlier, Commissioner Crawford asked you a question about whether the O&L there was more important than providing, or how you would weigh out the value of this piece of O&L compared to the need for more housing. I put it in the context that the council's evidence is that we have 3.03% of the land in the district which is not O&L. And at a rough guess, about 20 hectares of land that we're talking about, or less, maybe 15. If you look at it in that context, are you able to make some sort of judgment as to where the way things should go?
If there wasn't other constraints applicable to that land, I think my view would be a bit different. And I mean, in terms of the value of that landscape versus others, that's where I belong, Dr. Reid, for that view. But yes, obviously, in the context of the district not having a relatively as much overland and a lot of O&L, then yes, we'd have to consider what areas it's appropriate to extend into the O&L. But in terms of the specific piece of land, the national grid corridor through that land, I think, you know, regardless of whether the O&L was there or not, the developer of land, either in front or to the rear of that, possibly not going to lead to realisation of significant housing.
It would have the same effect there if it was dealt with as a residential subdivision as the Transpower lines do through Fly the Country, wouldn't it? Or if Brightsdale would be able to manage to get a rather narrow corridor.
Possibly, but I think the rolling nature of the land might lead to houses being, you know, more of a low density, non-residential type development outcome. And
wouldn't that provide an appropriate transition?
Yes, that outcome could be achieved under the rural zoning through the identification of building platforms and applying the landscape. So that also road connections through the area would be more difficult as well in the surface tank. So that's why other reasons why I think that necessarily get the same outcome as Shiva.
Now, the one thing I wasn't sure about with your recommendation for the high density residential is the scope to do that. Can you put me at the submission that we could rely on if we accepted that?
Yeah, it's in front of me, but the submission is. Which the evidence of Mr. Gregson, he simplifies what the submission really gets off.
Sorry, when did I have this one?
7 months. I believe it refers to the broader area and a zoning between the NDC to the highest being business mixed use or industrial.
The relief sought was the rezoning of the site in white area to business mixed use zone or industrial zone, or amending the medium density residential zone provisions as set out in the initial plan, or any other additional consequential relief. The question is whether seeking business mixed use zone or the industrial zone they were seeking residential or business uses. So that creates the scope, doesn't it, rather than the density of residential that might be a byproduct.
From the submission that they just were seeking the most intensive zoning for their land that they could get from the UDP. Mm-hmm.
Then I'm just reading the submission amendment sought to the medium density residential zoning. And I can't see anything that seeks a higher density. But is that in I'm looking quickly, I'm not like an interesting time on that. In that sense.
I've got like two questions for each of us.
The witnesses.
But that was Andy Banks. You made it very clear that your preference, if there was to be any sort of development along this strip, it should be residential rather than business, or any form of business or industrial. Is that just a sort of a general impression, or was it based on any particular analysis of trip generations for different types of land use?
In my evidence, I did base it on all trip generation for the residential and business.
Was that worst case?
Yes, that's with the maximum level.
I mean, if you talked about some sort of low-intensity business or industrial activity, yard-based or warehousing or something, surely that wouldn't be... The trip generation would be probably less than high-density residential?
I base mine more on the business.
Yeah.
Its use rather than the...
I think with all the constraints we've got here, if anything is to be done at all, it's going to have to be something bespoke, something site-specific. So yes, I accept what you're saying in terms of traditional business zoning, worst case, yes, but if somebody came up with a much less intensive form of sort of space extension with lower traffic generation rates, would your attitude be the same?
Yeah,
well,
I guess it depends
on
it also allows for residential
activities
as well.
Well, I'm looking particularly at the part of it along here, which is within the out of control boundary, so it's not going to be residential. Assume it's not going to be residential. So if there was some sort of business activity that didn't have a particularly high traffic generation rate, would you?
Yeah.
When you say yes, what do you mean?
Oh, I guess in terms of lesser traffic generation.
Yeah. Your opposition would, you wouldn't maintain your opposition.
And I guess it would also be an assessment made on the number of heavier vehicles.
Yeah.
That would be accessible.
But you're talking about traffic that would be entering the state highway via the roundabout. Yeah. But, for example, residential generates very strong peaks. And as I understand it, business activity doesn't necessarily have the same peaking effect. The main peak is when the employees go home. But
I think the more, definitely, we see that in here, in Queensland, along the state highway here, that you do definitely see the more AM and PM peak.
Yes.
Forward.
But that's generated also by residents coming and going as much as people going to work, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So whether something's residential or whether it's industrial, you're still going to get a certain amount of people.
Yeah. Yes.
But there may be less employees per square metre under a low intensity and business scenario than there would be for residential.
Yeah, I think with my assessment, I base it on the commercial activity, the business, plus the residential,
more
on that.
Yeah, but it was a sort of a worst case analysis, yes, based on existing zones.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Just
on that, in terms of the PCR cracker that you were referring to, isn't this an unusual situation that if it's a residential, pretty much all the PCR cracker in the morning peak will be leaving that area, and in the evening peak will be returning all through the roundabout. There isn't any real alternative. And if you have any business activities in there, those traffic movements would be reversed at the same time, wouldn't they?
Yes, but I guess it's also rolling onto the railway as well.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It'd just be a matter of a total load on the roundabout more than the direction of the flows, yes. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yep.
Another one where you have come back seems to be slightly about it is, and that is the effect of high density residential on non-motorised traffic, because you've got quite a large piece of high density residential here, no sort of internal facilities, no internal commercial, so they're going to be, people are going to be home getting up a 5 mile or whatever, or the Pack and Save or Mitre 10 or whatever else develops on the Franklin Flats opposite. But you said you're concerned about people, particularly pedestrian activity on the highway there. Is your concern compatible with what Tim Banks is advocating with high density? And you can both answer the question if you want.
Wendy's concerns has led to my recommendations to strengthen the matters of discretion for subdivision and for multiple residential units to make sure that those connections are provided.
So your concept is predicated on better pedestrian connections? Yeah, thank you.
And I think it would generally change the environment of that area more developed. I guess that is people aware of potential crossing. I think my issue is that it is supposed to see one at 18, but in reality, vehicles don't go as fast.
So what sort of better pedestrian facilities can you achieve in a situation like that?
In an ideal world would be an overpass or underpass.
Or a signalized crossing?
Yeah.
I presume NZTO would be pretty reluctant to provide a signalised crossing. Mm. People don't use underpasses. People will go well out of their way to avoid using it. And I've struck this many times, and traffic engineers don't tend to recommend them because they know very well that people will ignore it and cross the road anyway. Because there's about security and amenity with underpasses generally.
Yeah. I'm not sure that would happen here though.
Yes.
Why not?
If you have stood on that side of the highway and tried to cross, you really
I know, but I'm thinking of, for example, many, many years ago when the University of Auckland attempted underpasses between the university campus and Albert Park, and all that after probably a year after they were put in. And they were caught on Salmon Street here, a major, major arterial road in the Auckland context. And after those underpasses were put in, what they were primarily used for was students playing indoor cricket. because people wanted to get across the road, still across the road. And other places come across, they become a security problem, and they become unpleasant, actually. It's really, really well designed, very wide and spacious and so on, and well lit. You make an overpass, and people have got to climb steps, or if you grade it so that the ramps end up going a long way. So, again, they don't work well. I do know what you mean about attempting to cross that road. It's dangerous, but so I'm just interested in what better facilities can be provided. Personally, I'm skeptical about anything except a signalised pedestrian crossing.
Just on that point, Ms. Kimbanks, you had a provisional subdivision application with consent. How can you tie a provisional something such as an overpass over the highway to a subdivision consent that might be some distance from it?
Yes.
Generally, when you're applying these conditions, it has to be on the land that's been subdivided rather than somewhere else. And we don't have the ability to impose financial contributions in this district. That is a Chapter 9 rule, not a Chapter 27 rule. If you subdivide it to 800 square metre lots, for example, as a means of saying, well, there's such a low density that trafficking isn't a problem, that pedestrian traffic isn't a problem, wouldn't that lead to inefficient use of the area?
That somebody is going to build enhanced pedestrian facilities across the highway.
Yes.
And it's not, at this stage, nobody's proposing anything of the sort. And it isn't within the capabilities of any developer of that HDR zone to do it themselves. So is this, would an HDR zoning here in that circumstances meet that test that you talk about of a zoning with unrealistic expectations, that's possibly putting pressure on somebody to commit expenditure that they otherwise had been thinking of?
I think it's quite as black and white as the situations that my legal submissions were intended to address. So they are focused at obviously infrastructure in terms of the waters, but also focus on transport was more in terms of
networks are in terms of the actual transport movements. And, for example, the need for upgrades to intersections rather than a pure focus on pedestrian facilities.
Well, I mean, all right, that's a macro scale infrastructure, and here we've got a more micro, very, very specific looking thing, but it's still infrastructure, and it's still, according to Tim Banks, an essential component of this going ahead. And,
yes.
And it's outside the ability of the potential developers to do anything about it.
Yes, yes, and I understand what you're saying. And, I mean, I'm not aware of any case law that goes down to that level of detail,
no.
That's what I'm acknowledging.
Yes.
But I, in terms of what the Environment Court has said, is that if that infrastructure is necessary to allow that activity, so high density residential activity, to go ahead without adverse environmental effects, there's no commitment to provide it, that's a good reason to reject the rezoning. So that would then turn to whether you considered on the evidence whether that adverse effects were to that people.
Well, it also might depend on whether the council is actually making a commitment to provide it.
I don't believe that's what's happening through this history.
No, that's what worries me.
Okay. Thank you for that.
And Commissioner Mount.
If I can really add a bit further to that, that stretch of highway is an issue for pedestrians, obviously, at the moment, and people do cross it, and
not just here. It's certainly not just here, is it?
And so the rezoning, while it's partly out of the hands of the developer, generates a further demand for that infrastructure to be installed. And the development contributions that come from that can partly contribute to the infrastructure that's needed.
But that would require that the development occurred first. Because you won't get the development contributions until the buildings are built.
Yeah, unless it was funded before that, then we could have just based through the right development contributions policy.
Mr. Chair, perhaps for the purposes of the reply, I could look a little bit further in terms of the council's current position in terms of where that sits, because I can't give you that information at this point in time.
No. It does appear to me on the face of it that it would just encourage people to use the land inefficiently. In the same way, for instance, that Spiro Heights is called the proposed zone being needs to be residential, it just ended up that they need to be residential because it was quite some freedom.
Yes. The context before.
So just a couple of more detailed things for either of the planners in the room. Just to remind me what a natural grid subdivision corridor is. I understand about the yard, but what's the corridor? What are the restrictions apply to that?
I understand that is
Which
is unknown, but it's 32 metres, I think, either side of the line. And you can undertake subduction in the area, but it's kind of different activities that it can be part of a lot that contains a residential use. But the residential use can't be located in the National Grid yard, which is
the yard is the area that the lines can actually swing over. 15 metres or 20 metres or whatever it is. But I was not familiar with this wider corridor. So it's just an area to be careful about and to consider at the time of subdivision rather than what amount of activity we've got corridor.
Yeah, essentially the provisions for that are in chapter 30.
Okay.
And there's rate control for you.
After Dr. Reed.
Yes.
looking at the proximity of the INL line and the transmission corridor through this and wondering about the appropriateness of an ONL line that sits just below a major transmission line corridor. Or does that transmission line corridor have such an adverse effect in itself, doesn't it?
No, I don't think it does.
Why not? Because it is a major detractor from the landscape, isn't it?
It is a detraction, but I don't think it's a major detraction.
From the landscape, which is itself at the lower end of our standing?
No, it's not a landscape that's from a lower end of our standing. It might be a part of a landscape.
Well, you did yourself say earlier that it wasn't exceptional.
I said that the small part of the overall landscape wasn't exceptional.
Yeah. And firstly, it's not exceptional, and then it's
well, it's not as exceptional.
Well, not as exceptional. Well, no, that's an interesting qualification.
I think this area has an extremely high aesthetic value and it has a lesser natural character. And that's what I said.
Yes.
And that is taking the existence of the transmission lines into account.
Would the National Grid subdivision corridor building the road underneath it, is it acceptable?
I believe it would be. It's a trigger for needing a consent for whatever goes in there, but I think something like that could be accommodated in the rules.
Has that been discussed with Transparent Power in the process of doing the HIF application?
I'm not sure, but it appears that that alignment towards Cryo Rise and also the one that was preliminary shown in
yes.
the other direction
yes.
Seem to align with that as much as it could.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is that something that could be clarified with Mr. Kessler or somebody?
It could be, but that road hasn't been designed. So
I know it hasn't, but it must have been some initial thought for that road.
Yeah. Perhaps we can respond to that in the reply. I'm not sure if you have anything different to say.
Yeah, it might be. Just the relationship between the position of that road and the corridor.
The size of the local shopping centre.
center that will be created in a consistency with the purpose of the zone. Advice that there is sufficient commercial land in this area to meet projected demand over the next 20 years, potential for adverse traffic effects, potential for further development of attributions to aircraft noise, and inconsistency with strategic directions to the policies. Ms. Kimberly Davis considers the request to rezone these properties to a higher density residential zone and does not support the submissions on the basis of traffic and parking effects.
Hey, CNS Hunter and Brad Giddens request that all of the Grove Street be rezoned from modified LDR, low density residential, to a Wilshire Shopping Centre, LSC zone. I am opposed to this rezoning based on existing traffic problems and parking demands along the residential street that often reduce to one lane of traffic as they are not able to simultaneously craft each other. I am concerned with the increased intensification of the land slope, and the evidence provided does not, in my opinion, give comfort that LSC is appropriate for the subject area.
Thank you.
Brett Gillens submitted 8286 for the residential intensification for relatively large areas within the out of control boundary. I've not supported this submission on the basis of traffic and parking effects, and also that ASAN are not consistent with the land use management approach of PC35, which I support integrating into the PDP. This approach maintains the status quo and limits density within the in-noise boundary and OCB to that which is currently enabled by the ODP.
Now, Ms. Wingings, on one of the sites, there is an existing detour.
Sanctuary.
And at least one of the sites, there's also an office activity. Do those activities in themselves create an existing traffic issue?
I don't believe it, because they have provided on-site parking for those activities.
Right. Now, when we were questioning Mr. Osborne the other day, he said, and asked questions, that there was a place for an ability for someone to have a small business with a maximum of 2 full-time equivalent workers. If each of those properties had one of those businesses, would that create a traffic problem in the Bryant Street?
They would require on-site parking, basically. But I think those, I think it's small traffic generators, there's one business, rather than, say, local shopping centres, so much bigger than you didn't know.
Yes, but that was the point of my question.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yes. Okay. Now, the question for the planners, either or both of you, given Mr. Osborne's evidence, the existing situation, and Ms. Wingebank's evidence, is this a situation where maybe some sort of bespoke provision for low-level commercial activity is appropriate, given its location and joining on one side a car park for the local shopping centre and the other side a bus station? From a planning point of view, do either of you have opinions one way or the other on that? I don't mind which order you go. I want to hear from you both. I don't mind which order.
Yeah, I think the first answer is that the notified zoning does allow for that, and obviously got consent under that.
Not as a matter of activity, it doesn't. The notified zoning is allowed for anything that you apply to, and very few prohibited activities in this district. So,
is a concept in principle that a lot of these things are in sports, those home occupation.
No, we're not talking. Mr. Osborne would be good Christian responsible to say it's not home occupation, you don't have to live there, but you have a small business.
Well, so it depends what type of bespoke zoning it was and what it's attracting other customers to come and visit the site, or it's just that business operating within its site and providing the parking that it needs.
Is that just a question the name for a bespoke client there, given that it's three years, that it's the Frankton Working Shopping Centre and the...
Well, Mr. Osborne's point was that these small businesses quite often can't afford the rents in shopping centres. And that's the reason the rental centre is there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And the same in Gorge Road, where there's a physiotherapist in what's proposed to be used as residential. And I think his point was that there is some sort of demand for those, if you like, incubator opportunities where people can start a business at a small scale. And I was wondering if this was the sort of location that might, given that there's an existing activity of that sense, you're able to make it more.
I'm just wondering when one of the loaded studios don't allow for a commercial expense at a limited scale. Is it 100 square metres?
Yes.
But not offices?
No. It's not commercial. It's...
Okay. Is going to be this restricted? Discretionary?
Any commercial expense is pretty good. What was the floor area?
100 square metres. And after that, well, I know that after 100 square metres you took them off in time.
So below 100 square metres would be
restricted discretionary.
And that applies across the residential zone.
And there's discretionary, so parking, traffic and access.
So no, we're not talking about occupation, you shouldn't have.
This is for commercial activities, separate
time. So Mr. Dibbins can buy a house anywhere in a residential zone and set up his office with one with no restriction on employees, just plunging to less than 100 square metres.
Yes, but there's policies and there's a matter of discretion which says need for the commercial activity to serve day-to-day needs of local residents, and there's policies about needing to serve and be appropriate for the local city.
So it's not.
These are more likely to be people with little internet based positions. And clients could be anywhere in the world.
Or could be a week designer.
Not even the dentist would
qualify
because the customers might not be locals.
Well, you wouldn't survive on just a local customer morning, does it? Centres, Queenstown, Monaco, Harrington. Are there any policies that do the same sort of thing for local shopping centre zones?
There are. And I haven't checked through any. It's about commercial zones. So if you so policy 3, 2, 1, 2, 3,
we've got avoid future additional commercial rezoning that will undermine the function and viability of the Frankton commercial area, or which will undermine increasing integration to the lower suburb area.
But we've equally got policy 321.1, provides for a wide variety of activities and sufficient capacity within commercially zoned land to accommodate business growth and diversification. Mm-hmm. And I think Mr. Osman's evidence was that we don't have that at the bottom end.
The
yes. Yeah. Between the home occupation and the commercial zones are not. They take a big step, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
That was his point.
Yeah.
It's easy to occur with a corner shopping centre with a few miles or so, but actually, isn't it?
Mm.
Quite a lot.
I suspect also part of the problem is that if they're not made separately, they end up going into the industrial areas. If you've got more drugs.
Yeah.
Yes. Which is actually using up land which is more valuable for other commercial or industrial activities.
Yeah.
It has been dealt with in other instances. In Auckland City, they did, not in the military plan, this is going back a few years, in the previous city plan, they did business plan, they provided for the use of existing buildings on certain arterial roads for office activities as a permitted activity. They specified the areas.
Okay.
That was a result of an appeal, which I happen to know about, so I was what was. And that was a similar sort of thing, but those are different because they cannot limit the number of employees. But I think Mr. Osborne's evidence is that meaning something. He said that the limit on the number of employees was more important than the limit on floor space.
Yes, he did. Yes. And if you look at the floor space allocated in the calculation, it's something like 23 square metres of floor space for every employee when you're doing your modelling.
Mm.
Well, I mean, that would mean 100 square metres could have
5
people, if that's a real average that you can apply case by case. You wouldn't want a little village. I wonder if you could pick up on it. The other dimension of an approach would enable, say, 2 full-time equivalents might be to require it to be in an existing building. So rather than enabling redevelopment of the area, enable it within an existing building.
Yeah. And that would retain
look and feel of a residential area.
That's right.
Flexibility for resuming the use still could, anyway. The higher and better use in many cases might be residential, but in this situation with the SN, it's never going to be very much, is it?
That
end
of it within the.
Is that in, still in it?
It's in the out control area.
It's in the out control area. It's
very close to the noise boundary.
Okay.
You may have to wait for your reply, and we'll put the very same questions to Mr. Gibbons.
Okay, so it would just relate maybe to those 4 sites?
I think that's fair. But we have spoken on it, given that that's where it's been asked for. And I am not aware of it. The solution is a commercial zone or a provisional residential zone specific to that area. I'd be interested in your views on that.
So first of all, Sugar Lane, this is Commission 16.125. past residents.
Two submissions, one from the EC properties, 16, and one from Kenneth Muir, 125. Sought the rezoning of the Sugar Lane Effective Marine area from low density residential to a commercial zone for business mixed use. I've started with that. The EDD sought this service station. To medium density or high density residential or a consistent zone of any rezoning of the Sugar Lane area. The Sugar Lane area contains a mix of activities and does not exhibit low density residential characteristics, nor does the ZD energy side. The existing uses do not align with the purpose of the low density residential zone. I do not consider that either local shopping centre or business mixed use is appropriate for this area. Due to the potential for significant intensification afforded by these zones in particular business mixed use. Neither of these zones reflect the broad mix of existing land uses and the planned Franklin Marina. Ms. Mindy Banks is also concerned about the potential adverse traffic effects associated with the proposed rezonings. Similar to my assessment of McBride Street, I do not consider the local shopping centre to be appropriate in this location given the proximity to the local shopping centre at Franklin. In my opinion, this area would benefit from a comprehensive review and a possible implementation of a marine-based commercial zone, or a structure plan or outline plan that considers the future of the Sugar Lane area as a whole. As no evidence has been provided by the two Sugar Lane submitters on the implementation of either commercial zone option at this location, I have recommended that the rezoning of these submissions be rejected. With regard to the Z Energy site, while there may be an existing commercial use on the site, this has been established by a resource consent, which does not automatically mean the site should have a commercial zone. Ms. Kimberly Banks considers the request to rezone these properties to a higher density residential zone, concluding that the increased residential development would result in an inappropriate spot zone and would result in adverse effects with regard to character, residential amenities, and dominance.
And Ms. Kimberly, can you please read out your summary on Z Energy? Paragraph 3.
The Z Energy submission seeks rezoning of land around the existing Z Energy site in Franklin Marina. I do not support the Z Energy rezoning due to adverse effects on character, residential amenity and dominance, and a lack of information regarding potential site contamination. The Franklin Marina is also considered in the evidence of Ms. Evans, and we both accept that the notified low density residential zoning does not adequately reflect the mix of existing activities that make up the existing environment. However, I consider little benefit will be achieved by rezoning to medium density residential, taking into account these existing uses and traffic constraints at Sugar Lane.
I think it's probably good to take them doing it now and then have questions.